I'ma keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Happy Friday, everybody. I'm kind of pumped. Brewers won, beat the dreaded Cardinals last night. I'm headed to the game a little bit later today, having a full Brewers Friday afternoon, meeting a good friend from college. Gonna go to a classic supper club before the game, which is always a good time. If you don't have plans this afternoon, not to worry, Civic Media's got you covered. Again, the St. Louis Cardinals playing the Brewers here at home. First pitch is gonna be around 6:35. You can find that game by downloading the Civic Media app and checking it out on WRCE, Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, and 98Q Country, WCQM. So we've got you covered this Friday night. It's also Mother's Day weekend. So happy Mother's Day weekend a little bit early. And that got me thinking. I've been giving Christy Nome a really hard time on the show. I think deservedly so. And it's only gotten worse this past week for South Dakota's governor in the VP Olympics. I think it's safe to say she's probably off the list. Wouldn't you agree, Anya? I mean, it's not gone well this week at all.
No, I don't think if there was a plan behind this, I don't think the plan is working.
Of course, we talked about the fact that she killed Cricket, the family dog, by putting a bullet in its head and dumping it into a gravel pit. It's also made plain in the book. She then killed a goat and tortured it basically first, sent it into the same gravel pit. It's also come out that she's killed three horses. It's just not good. But the bad went to worse this week. And it has to do with a whole gamut of basically lies that she told in the book. I thought we could just listen to the interview that she gave last Sunday, a bit of it, on CBS, because in her book that she was on a book tour for until Wednesday, more on that in a moment, but she claims in the book that she met with North Korea's dictator Kim Jong-un, which is really weird. Couple of just fact setups here. There's no record of her ever meeting him. And typically the State Department or someone would have some record of a U.S. official taking this sort of meeting. And at the time that she claims the meeting occurred, which was, I think around 2012-ish, she was a backbencher in Congress. That's simply to say kind of a nobody in the House of Representatives. And so why would the newly minted dictator of North Korea meet with a nobody congressperson from the U.S. House? It just doesn't track at all. And at the time, those of us who are kind of wonks about this stuff, the U.S. and North Korea weren't what you would call on friendly terms. So, again, it doesn't make any sense. When foreign policy experts were asked, is it possible that this occurred and we just didn't know about it? Basically, they all said, no, there's no way this meeting happened. And, oh, here's this other little problem. At the time that she claims this meeting took place, again, probably around like 2012-ish, Kim Jong-un had only been leading North Korea for about a year, and his first known foreign trip after taking power wasn't until 2018, and she claims to have met him before that. So, like, none of it lines up. And again, she wasn't in North Korea, though she tries to say that she was, and then she tries to pivot and claim that it was in the DMZ. It's just very weird. The upshot of all of this is basically what happened on this interview. Take a listen. This is going to be cut six on you.
As soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes and looked at this passage. And I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. As soon as it was brought to my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days and that those edits will be in place and that people will have the updated version.
So you did not meet with Kim Jong-un. That's what you're saying.
You know, I've met with many, many world leaders, I've traveled around the world. I think I've talked extensively in this book about my time serving in Congress, my time as governor, before governor, some of the travels that I've had. I'm not going to talk about my specific meetings with world leaders. I'm just not going to do that. This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book. And as soon as it was brought to my attention, I made sure that that was adjusted.
Anecdote? This is just rich to me. And by the way, CBS followed up with her twice on Monday, and it just got worse and worse. She audio recorded this book, so she spoke those words. One would know if one had sat down with the dictator of North Korea. That's not something you just get wrong. So, do you have bad memory? Maybe that's, did the meeting not happen? Are you claiming it did happen, but you just can't talk about it? And I love the very Trumpian, I've met with many, 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 many world leaders. It just doesn't make any sense at all. And it's a lie. It's a flat out lie about something that I would like to think is pretty important to most people. Anya, you've got a theory about her reading the book.
Well,
I love this.
You know, people keep saying, the question that comes forward, how could she write this book and voice it and not know what was in it? And that's asked in a rhetorical way. I think I have a non-rhetorical answer. It's because she didn't write it. She's already talked about the ghostwriter, but I don't think the ghostwriter is a human. I think that this was all written and subsequently voiced by AI. I think it's possible. I think it was always going to happen. And if this is the way it did, maybe it's not a lie, Maggie. Her meeting with Kim Jong-un is just one of those pesky AI hallucinations.
Hallucinations?
Not a lie. A hallucination.
It tends to track for me. I don't know about you all. But just the bizarreness of not being able to even answer the question, right? So you didn't meet with Kim Jong-un. Just say, no, I didn't. It was a mistake. I'm sorry it was included. Guess what? News cycle probably moves on, at least to a certain extent. But this inability to speak with any clarity and to admit when you're wrong, when the whole point of this book is basically to be like, I'm a real bad, you know, blah, 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 and I'm accountable. I do the tough stuff. It's, you know, what's really tough is saying I'm wrong and I'm sorry I got that wrong. That's actual toughness. Seems to be something that's now long gone from the GOP. But, you know, again, she has, it's not admitted, but it's fairly well documented, an open secret within the GOP that she's conducted a years-long affair. These stories of basically animal cruelty have come out. Serial exaggerator, if not liar, a local news outlet in South Dakota did some other fact-checking of some of the other items in the book that were less widely focused on and reported about, as well as some of her other statements. She's made statements, again, trying to defend herself here, about I've been working on federal policy for over 30 years, and I know lots about agricultural policy. I mean, there was a whole series of explanations and sort of defensive statements that she made. So just pause there for a second. Kristi Noem is 52. To say that you've been working on, quote, federal policy for over 30 years, my time in serving and making policies in this country has been extensive and covered decades. 30 years? You were 22 when you were crafting federal policy? It's just, when you've lost all train of fact, right? When you've crossed over into lying, serial exaggeration, you know, that becomes really easy to say. And it's so obviously disprovable. It's ridiculous. But, you know, I was asked yesterday, it was interesting. I was at an event. A woman asked me, she's a communications professor at Marquette University. And she said, how do you go on the radio every day and talk for 2 hours and not screw up, like not say wrong things all the time? And I said, that's a great question. And I said, one, we try really hard. I try really hard to use sources that generally are triple fact checked news sources. And I said, but fundamentally, at the end of the day, I have a certain set of values and beliefs and a viewpoint that I'm always consistent about. So if you're always saying what you believe to be true, you have fidelity to the facts, you don't engage in those sorts of hyperbolic exaggerations, guess what? It gets a lot easier to not say things that are evidently provable and obviously ridiculous. I think Kristi Noem's got a problem with that. But what I wanted to cue up this afternoon is that I've been reflecting on how I have been talking about Kristi Noem and her treatment in the media. We're going to listen to some of the sound. I got to say, Fox News is just getting brutal with Kristi Noem over this past week. Again, serial liar, one can call her credibly an adulteress, animal cruelty person. There's lots to criticize here. When we come back, we're going to listen to a couple of messages. We're going to come back. But then I want to listen to some of this sound from Fox, because Fox is an interesting ecosystem, if you will, and how they addressed these problems and engage in these conversations when somebody's so evidently lying or exaggerating, you know, but not so much with the former MAGA president. That not so much, you know what I mean? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. If you want to join our conversation via text or call 855-75-CIVIC, Kirk just did. He says Kristi Noem's a psychopath. We will talk about it after these brief messages. I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Welcome back, Wisconsin. Kristi Noem, she's trying to be a playa, but she ain't getting it. So the lies about Kim Jong-un, the lies about being a federal policymaker for 30 years, starting at the ripe young age of 22. She also said this. She's talking about First Nations or First People reservations in South Dakota. And she claimed that they have drug cartels set up in South Dakota on the reservations. And the interviewer said that they're set up, meaning they exist there on First Nation reservations in South Dakota. Oh, yes. How do you know that? Because I've seen the pictures and our investigators have interacted with them. Problem is, there's no actual evidence of any of this. The South Dakota U.S. Attorney's Office and the South Dakota Attorney General's Office could not confirm there's any drug cartel activity on First Nation reservations in South Dakota. I mean, why are you lying about that? It just seems so strange. She also claimed in No Going Back, this book that's become her political death knell, that she was a children's pastor. Problem? Pastor is usually someone who's been ordained. Kristi Noem's never been ordained as a pastor or priest or any kind of faith leader. Just weird language to use. perhaps giving some credence to Anya's suggestion that it's just AI writing the book. She also said that the impeached South Dakota Attorney General Jason Ravsburg, he's a topic for another day, that he was on his phone when he hit and killed a person in his car. But again, there's no evidence of that. That's not true. Why would you lie about that? It's just weird. So again, trying to get this full picture of these serial exaggerations, these lies, this weird sort of performance that Kristi Noem has been engaging in. Let's take a listen. So what happened was the Kim Jong-un controversy started to break over the weekend, right? This was on top of the "you killed Cricket by putting a bullet in Cricket's head" controversy and the goat. That had kicked off last week. So then the Kim Jong-un problem came up on Sunday and Monday. And then some of these other factual inaccuracies in the book came up. And keep in mind, it's as to Kim Jong-un, first her people said, it was a different leader. Maybe the story about that evolved a number of times too, which is sort of PR 101. Like, get your response to the lie correct the first time. Like, don't have to iterate your explanations because that does not look good. And by Wednesday, on Monday and Tuesday, there was still some defense of Governor Noem from some of the right-wing outlets. But by Wednesday, gloves were off. Now, the interesting thing is she had these other interviews scheduled for Wednesday on a bunch of different news outlets, CNN as well as Fox. She had been giving interviews pretty constantly Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. By Wednesday, she canceled all of the media appearances and said, "I've got to get back to South Dakota because there's all this terrible weather." Except that the terrible weather had already rolled through South Dakota on Monday and Tuesday when she was busy in New York giving all of these interviews. And by the time she claimed, it was all the terrible weather, it was balmy and 50 in South Dakota. So now, granted, a governor has to do disaster response, but she seemed utterly unconcerned on Monday and Tuesday as she was busy with the bright lights and the fancy interviews. So by the time Wednesday evening rolled around, Greg Gutfeld and company on Fox News had absolutely had it, as had Stuart Varney. Now, she actually gave the interview to Stuart Varney. Let's take a listen to this because it is wow.
The governor of South Dakota is Kristi Noem, and she joins me here in New York City. Governor, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Welcome to New York.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate that.
What are you doing in New York?
I don't know. I'm anxious to get back home.
Well, let's do this first.
Yes, okay. All right. We'll wait till the interview's over.
Okay. In your new book, it's called No Going Back, you include a story about shooting your dog, despite your team telling you not to put that in the book. I have to say the decision didn't go down well. To include the story about the dog, it's not gone down well. Many people are questioning your political future.
Well, I don't think you have the facts straight. This was a vicious, dangerous dog that was a working dog. And I had to make a choice between the safety of my children and an animal that was killing livestock and attacking people. So it's included because a lot of politicians run from the truth.
They try to hide
from tough decisions. It was a very hard decision for me. It was 20 years ago.
Was it a puppy?
No, it was an adult working dog. An adult working dog that was attacking livestock.
14 months old.
And killing livestock.
The dog was 14 months old.
It was a year and a half old, the dog was, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you think it was good politics to include that story?
That has been a story that's been out there for years, Stuart. People, my political opponents have used it for years. So I want people to know the truth on it.
Do you still
think
you could be
what this book is about?
Could you be the vice president of Donald Trump?
I tell you, the president, the only person who decides that is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the only person who will decide who his vice president is.
And have you talked to him since the dog story emerged recently?
Yes, I talk to Donald Trump often, absolutely. And I will tell you one thing, is that he needs somebody who will help him win. And I have told him that I have supported him from the very beginning. When he was in the White House, I was on offense every day in South Dakota. I was fighting for my people. He was helping me bring solutions to them. And I need to get him back in the White House so I can continue to do my job and continue to protect freedom and liberty in South Dakota. So he knows that I just want him to win and that I'll do whatever I can to help.
If you were writing the book today, mm-hmm. would you include the dog story?
You know, this is a wonderful book. Did you read the book?
Not yet.
Oh, you should. The first chapter.
But the question stands.
The whole first chapter.
If you were writing it today,
yes,
would
proud
you
of
include
this book.
The dog story?
I'm proud of this book. If you read the first chapter, it's all about when this rioting started. When you turn on the news today and all you see that's happening on these college campuses and what's going on with supporting Hamas and the pro-terrorist organizations, the first chapter in this book covers the riots that happened at the RNC at the White House and how that started with Antifa and the fact that this president that's in the White House, Joe Biden, will not shut this down and that they're chanting hatred towards the Jewish people and exterminating them. That's what people should be talking about, Stuart.
Your political
judgment. I know that a lot of people are using attacks and trying to take me down because they're scared of me.
Just to fast forward, the very end of this, Varney pushes her more and she says, well, we need to talk about the issues that matter to the American people. And Varney responds, well, we're out of time, Christy. It's just great. But, you know, that was the setup. And by Wednesday night on Greg Gutfeld, it was just an absolute all-out Christy Noem attack. She didn't show up for the interview, and they had a field day with it. Calling out, we've got a new texter from the 414 saying the governor of Arkansas is in the same class as the governor of South Dakota. It seems odd that the people of the United States in these states are so willing to vote for politicians who have such low levels of credibility. I think also there's a piece of this that when a politician gets into the national spotlight, the scrutiny really gets turned up. So when we come back, we're going to take a listen to the Gutfeld jokes. And then I'm going to turn to my reflections on how we're approaching this question. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Join us, 855-752-4842. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Happy Friday. I kind of had a bit of an epiphany this morning as I was thinking about the show. I spent a lot of time on Christy Noem. We're going to take a quick listen. Eventually, conservative media, Stuart Varney et al., including Newsmax and Fox News, basically turned on her by Wednesday evening this week. It was all over. Let's take a listen. This is on Greg Gutfeld's show. Not necessarily the pinnacle of good taste or, frankly, good humor. But boy, he and Dana Perino had quite a field day when Governor Noem no-showed his show. Let's take a quick listen.
But who knows why she canceled, right? When we asked her how her week had been going, she replied, rough. Maybe it was some bad weather. I heard it was raining cats and dogs. I tried to convince Noem to stay and do our show, and I even told her that my dog Gus had all his shots. She replied, not yet, he hasn't. Yeah. Yeah, she just shoot a dog. She screwed the pooch. Of course, Noem faces controversy over stories from her new book. CBS News claims Noem is now in the doghouse with MAGA. But lucky for her, we now know there's plenty of room.
Wow.
Thank you. Yeah. See, the dog's dead. And
So... Yeah, it's childish, right? These are punchlines that basically, you know, your high school comedy sports troupe could come up with if given 15 minutes. Oh, the use of puns. Well done, Greg. But I'm not going to buy the book, but I kept looking for news about other pieces of what was in this book. And one story got written about this morning that I came across, and it really helped snap things into clearer focus for me. In the book, one of the other anecdotes that she tells is that she was once called by Nikki Haley, who's the former UN ambassador and, excuse me, former ambassador of the U.S. to the UN, and also the former governor of South Carolina. And Haley called her and said, "Hey, how have things been going? I've heard good things about you. I've heard some bad things, too. But I just want you to know that I'm looking out for you, and I'll let you know if I hear bad things." And the way Nikki Haley tells the story, it sounds really nefarious. It sounds dark. Here's what Christy Noem went on to say about that phone call, that alleged phone call from the former governor of South Carolina and former UN ambassador. She said, quote, "It was clear that Nikki wanted me to know that there was only room for one Republican woman in the spotlight. It was weird. Unsurprisingly, I never received any more calls or mentoring from her, but the message was clear. I'm the alpha female here, and you should know your place." I actually felt a little sad for her. And she also slams Ronna McDaniel, the former head of the RNC. And this made me think to myself, wow, this woman's got a particular view of the world. And it seems to me that she feels or believes a couple of things. And I'm going to get to those in a second. I want to observe one other fact before I sort of share with you my aha epiphany about all of this. And that is, objectively, if you look back at past video footage of the former governor and past photos of her going back to her U.S. House of Representatives days, her physical appearance has changed significantly. It seems very, I don't know, Trumpified might be a word that I would use. She used to have much, much shorter hair. Some of the photos, it's even sort of like wedged up and like above her ear length. Now it is long, flowing hair. Her lips look bigger. I'm just saying this objectively. Her lips look bigger. Her skin looks tighter and like glossier. And she seems to have very thick, beautiful eyelashes in all these interviews now. And she's also changed her wardrobe. It tends to be a little bit more form-fitting and sleeker, more sort of traditionally sexy or feminine. And of course, there are the infamous veneers that she got in Texas. So what do we have here, right? When I stepped back and looked at this, it seemed to me we have a woman who is struggling to demonstrate to a man who is cartoonishly cruel himself that she too is cruel and tough, but at the same time trying to not be too cruel or too tough, and she missed the mark, obviously, trying to demonstrate her competence. I've met with many, many world leaders. I can do this. I know things. I'm smart. I'm engaged. And all the while trying to maintain a very traditional concept or vision of femininity and being sexy and all of these things. And it struck me as incredibly sad and yet such a reflection of especially where the MAGA-controlled GOP seems to be in this moment. If you step back and think about this, I'm sorry, has there been a Republican House Speaker? No. Many of the current cadre of notable Republican leaders fit that same kind of mold, right? This performative cruelness matched with overt sort of beauty signals that seem to be a little enhanced, right? And much more sexually appealing appearance. Again, this very particular box. Not all of them. But I just thought, okay, let's think. Who are the Republican women leaders that pop to mind off the top of my head? Well, she mentioned Nikki Haley. Objectively, a nice-looking woman, right? Her campaign didn't go much of anywhere, did it? Don't think so. I thought of Elise Stefanik. Now, attractive, maybe not traditionally so, but also extraordinarily performatively cruel. Meghan McCain, attractive as well. Maybe not as cruel, but she had the benefit of nepotism. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, performatively cruel and nepotism. I mean, basically, you're either checking all of the boxes or one of the boxes. Traditionally beautiful, performatively cruel, and or with nepotism. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene, by no means a leader in the MAGA GOP, but just her whole brand is, I'm performatively cruel every day. Now, there's one female Republican leader that popped to my mind. Oh, I forgot a couple other ones. We could consider Alina Habba, Trump's lawyer. We could consider Lara Trump, now heading the RNC. Maybe even Donald Trump's wife or his daughter. Again, it's, you got to have one of those boxes and preferably two in spades. So what does all of that mean? How does it stack up to Democrats? Of course, women still struggle in these boxes everywhere. Like, we have Nancy Pelosi. Currently, Representative Catherine Clark is the whip in the House. Debbie Stabenow is the chair of the Senate Democrats Communications and Policy Committee. Amy Klobuchar is chair of the Senate Democrats Steering Committee. And there's a female vice president from the Democratic Party. And then I started to think about, oh my gosh, let's focus in locally. Let's keep it Wisconsin for a second. And two women's names immediately popped to my head, into my mind. And it was Judge Jennifer Darrow and former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish. And neither one of those women were cruel, I don't think by any stretch. And yet, both of the men, Dan Kelly for Judge Darrow, and Tim Michaels for Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, brutally attacked those women and ran them out. Their femaleness was used to undermine them. Then you look at the men that populate the GOP, and again, what you see is cruelty, and I don't think we can call it performative anymore. It is cruelty, active, everyday engagement of cruelty in some version. These people aren't humans. We don't have to care about these people who might be our neighbors. And so when we step back and look at all of this, like, what's the cause? Why is this the case? And I think that the GOP reflects this, frankly, antiquated, regressive viewpoint of the world. It's not make America great again. It's make America male, white, and rich again. But that's only accruing to a certain type of person. It doesn't happen to be women. It's troubling to me. Who is the woman in the GOP that's going to break through? I just don't see that. And so as we approach Mother's Day and I'm thinking about all these things, Where do women sit in the GOP? If you're a conservative woman, who do you turn to? Who's the person that you see representing your beliefs and your values in the GOP? Because I'm struggling to see it, forgetting my own values and beliefs. But if I was a conservative, when I look and I open up that playbook, there's just maybe one. Her name's Liz Cheney. And she's been excised, turned out, turned away from, disavowed by the entire GOP. Oh, and she also had the benefit of nepotism. So I guess I'm back to my three categories: performative cruelty, traditional beauty, and or nepotism. So where do women fit in the GOP? If you're a conservative woman listening, I'd love to hear from you. Where do you think you fit? When you listen to the Supreme Court arguing, and it's the five men and even the one conservative woman and the other women on the court don't really get to have a say, what does that tell you about your place in the modern MAGA party? Feels like it's window dressing. Does anybody really think Lara Trump is running the RNC? I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. Absolutely not. Does anybody think Alina Habba is actually a good lawyer? No. Does anybody think Melania actually loves Donald? So what function, what purpose, what respect, what power do women have in the modern MAGA party? What power do mothers have in the modern MAGA party? Other than being asked to, you know, show up at school board meetings and argue about banning books. I just don't see it, especially when it comes to leadership. So I want to hear from you. What do you all think about this? I kind of brought me to a really sort of sad spot. I'm glad that's not my party, because I like to see a reflection of women in power, in respectful leadership, making policy, not just lying about policies that they were involved in when they were 22, and everybody knows that's not the case. I'm going to put a bow on this when we come back, so don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Sometimes Taylor Swift gets it exactly right. You know what I'm saying? I mean, wow. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. You know, all this humor at the, I think, earned expense of Kristi Noem to a large extent. She's dug this hole for herself and keeps on digging. It's Donald Trump, right? Lynn texting in from 612 saying, she's paying for it because it's a male-led, male-dominated, frankly, male-friendly-only GOP. Donald Trump does the same thing and gets away with it every day. You don't see Greg Gutfeld making fun of Donald Trump in absentia, do you? Which brings me to this place. Again, I kind of want to, hey, how do we move on from this? Before I do that, of course, want to take your calls or texts if you want to chime in. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Jeff chiming in from Shorewood saying, I disagree with Liz Cheney on many issues, but she is far preferable to Trump and any of the MAGAs. Thanks, Jeff. Always good to hear from you. Joanne, nice to see you on my call list. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thanks for the amazing analysis. Just one additional factor. You've brought this up in the past as well. When women make a mistake, it's just one and done. And when in the very early days of reporting about Kristi Noem's situation, when the story about the dog came up, a lot of people said, that's it. one and done. Yep. And I remembered what you were saying about that one and done mantra. And I'm just worried a little bit myself and my own reaction. That's why I listened on for more information and did a little research myself about Kristi Noem, because I was scared about my own reaction. I don't want to say one and done. Whenever a woman makes a mistake, we write her off. I thought, well, maybe there's something deeper about the story. But when more factors came out about Kristi Noem, I decided to weigh in with the people who are opposing her. But again, we've got to be careful when we talk about women, because
I agree, Joanne. I mean, we're right there, right? Anya's reminded me of a phrase that's used to describe this one and done. And oh, by the way, let me just say this about the one and done phenomena, also known as the glass cliff effect. The one and done, it's not just one mistake and you're out or vilified or made fun of and all the rest of it that comes with it. It's that the target that you're trying to hit is so unbelievably infinitesimally small. And boy, is that target even smaller for mothers, right? We are so quick to criticize the way mothers mother. The way, oh, well, you're a stay-at-home mom. No, that's a working woman. Oh, you're a working mom. There's always so many people ready to line up to criticize a woman for not meeting their precise expectations, for not talking the way that they should or not dressing the way that they should. Whatever it is, it's an impossible target to hit because every single person has some different idealized version in their head of what a woman should be, a mother should be. Oh my gosh, a female leader. You had best not make any mistakes because you will be taxed for those mistakes. Jean from Eau Claire, welcome to the show.
Great show as usual. You know, I'm 69 and I've looked through a lot of the changes in the way that women are treated, and they were moving up and they were being respected for being individuals and to see their strengths in a lot of different areas. But since, you know, I hate to say it, even with Scotty Walker and Alec and the whole gang, you know, demoralizing women, making them less than people, it's frustrating to see this happening to so many very talented women.
Yep. It's so true, Jean. And I'm afraid that within the ranks of conservatives, and I'm going to set aside the MAGA folks, that women have conservative women have become lulled into accepting this sort of limitations, being put in a box, that this is the only way for a woman to be. I have to think that so many conservative women themselves want to say, I disagree, I want to be different. Or I don't want to be different, but I want my daughter to have the freedom to be different, to make choices that for her fulfill her purpose. And we do all of this in this context of this healthcare system and this employment system in this country that is the worst in the developed high-income world for mothers. Our maternal mortality rates are rising in this country. We discharge women from hospitals after giving birth with no guaranteed support. Unlike Britain, there are no free midwives. Unlike Sweden, there are no lactation consultants. Oh, most insurance covers one OBGYN follow-up after you've given birth. We're the only high-income country in the world without any provision for paid family and medical leave. Only 13 states provide it. Almost 25% of working mothers in the U.S. are back within work within 10 days of giving birth. Because they can't afford to stay home unpaid under the fairly dysfunctional Family Medical Leave Act. We have the second most expensive childcare system in the world. 4 out of 10 parents say they've gone into debt because of the cost of childcare. And as a result, 45% of working moms have considered leaving the workforce and 13% already have. because childcare can cost more than college. And that's, by the way, if you can find it, because 51% of people in the United States live in a childcare desert. So on this Mother's Day weekend, let's talk about what family values are. Let's talk about valuing mothers in the family. Let's talk about valuing women in society, in the boardrooms, in politics. Because that's what it's actually about. Family values means valuing women in every place that women are, which should be everywhere. Family values means valuing women in the family. Let's fix this broken system. Let's make the target bigger. And let's dismantle that glass cliff. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. News, weather, and sports are up next. And then a special installment of Foodie Friday. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment.